Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast.
There we go.
I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Moses.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. What do you call a Little River cover band? Tributary.
Oh, my gosh.
There we go.
That's funny.
Well, I've already said which band we're talking about. Rob, tell them who we're hanging out with, the lead singer of which, anyway, we're hanging out with Wayne Nelson, lead singer of the Little River Band. Kick it off with a little, let's kick it off with Night Owls. How about that?
All right. On lead vocals, Wayne Nelson. Here's Night Owls from Little River Band. Yeah.
There we go.
That is the Night Owls by the Little River Band featuring today's guest, Wayne Nelson on lead vocals and bass. That is from the 1981 album Time Exposure. Little River Band, one of the Mount Rushmore Australian bands. We've had this conversation before.
Yeah, we always talk about that.
What is the Australian equivalent of Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Right. What is, like, it's not American. Mount Rushmore
is there a mountain with faces on it in Australia?
Right. Like, what do you, when you need the top four of something in Australia, what do you call it?
Mount Outback Steakhouse. They're the bloomin' onion of, yeah, wow.
Sorry, Australian listeners.
We did not mean to offend
you. That's like,
anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't say blow me kangaroo down, like, at least in that voice.
Okay. So, anyway, did you say blow me kangaroo
That's
down?
That's what they say, right? Blow me kangaroo down, mate, right?
Is it?
I don't know. Did I just say something offensive?
I don't know. I have no idea. Okay. I've just never heard that. Okay. Let's see. The Night Owl
yeah,
went to...
Well, blow me... I think so.
Okay. Like, all right. Hey.
Blow my kangaroo down?
All right. Cool. Well, hey. All right.
Oh,
yeah.
There we go.
All right. The Night Owls went to number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 9 on the U.S. Billboard Top Rocks Tracks. I do that every time.
Top Rocks.
Gets me. I don't care. She sells seashells by the seashore. Doesn't
no
get
problem.
Me. Unique New York. The arsonist had oddly shaped feet. Actually, I said oddly, but okay. All right. So maybe that one gets me too. Number 9 on the Top Rock Tracks chart. Jeez. 33 on the Easy Listening chart. And number 18. It charted higher in the States than it did in Australia.
In the homeland.
In the homeland of the Little River Band. It is the first song to feature Wayne Nelson on lead vocals after his joining of the group, for which he is now the lead singer, like the...
He's the guy.
The number one, the main lead singer and bassist. And, of course, Little River Band is like a vocal group, you know what I mean?
Oh, man, yeah. And like, we'll talk to him in the interview about all the harmonies. And, dude, it's like... It's so rich.
Yeah. And if I was just, I usually don't even do this, but I closed my eyes while we were listening to that track, just to try and pick out as much as I could. There's so many harmonies going on. And if you're listening in headphones, you know, sort of on either side of you,
yeah,
the pan is, you know, beautiful. I actually don't, it depends on where you're listening to this song. I don't love the mix.
Okay.
The mix is a little tinny for my taste. But in headphones, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And you really get that nice separation, whatever, but still retaining the punch of like the low end and the drums and bass. So I was really enjoying that on headphones.
And they don't shy away from putting the guitar up in the mix, especially at the beginning.
You've got, they're like, harmonize everything in this song. It's like, you've got the, you know, you've got the harmony lead guitars and then you've got the vocals in like 17 part harmony and it's all stacked and split left and right. Yeah. Like it's really, there's a lot going on. This was the first song to feature Wayne. I said that it was the lead single for the band's sixth studio album, which was 1981's album Time Exposure. And it was produced by George Martin.
Yeah. Yes.
That George Martin,
the fifth Beatle
himself. George Martin took a train over to Australia and
the rest is history. And I was talking with Rob before, we normally save the meet the band section for further down the way, but as a good way to meet some of the Little River Band, if he would oblige me, I'd like to jump in and do a little bit of the meet the band earlier in the section than we normally do.
Oh, I will oblige you. I do want to say first though, that when you're looking up this song, The Night Owls, you have to be careful or you might run into this song by the group, The Night Owls, and you do have to be careful.
What in the world? We cannot play this. Rob will be editing over all these lyrics.
We're not leaving any of that in. I just had to do it.
What in the world? That's amazing. Okay. Let's meet the band that played on Time Exposure, if you're cool with that. Kick the jingle.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, we're going to meet the band that played on Time Exposure with the Little River Band that can be referenced. On lead vocals on the album, but not on this track, not on Night Owls, Glenn Shorrock. However, he did write Cool Change, which is another big Little River Band song. So he was in a group called The Twilights with a guy named Terry Britton, who wrote What's Love Got to Do With It with Tina Turner. Maybe we'll have that guy on someday. But play a little of Cool Change so you can hear a little Glenn tune. This feels like Little River Band.
Yeah, right.
There's one thing in my life that's missing. It's the time that I spend alone, sailing on the cool and bright clear water. There's lots of those friendly people, they're showing me ways to go, but I never want to lose their inspiration. Time for a cool change. I know that it's time for a cool change.
All right, that's there's Glenn for you guys. On acoustic and electric guitar, he sings lead vocals on Ballerina and Guiding Light. He's from Amsterdam. His name's Beeb Bertels.
Beeb, listen, this is one of the best names that I've come across in a long time.
Beeb Bertels.
There's two great names in this band, if you ask my opinion, and one of them is definitely Beeb Bertels.
Absolutely. Nicknamed BB Eyes after a Dick Tracy character. Not enough good Dick Tracy references. Mm. And I had an idea to cover Live Alone and Like It by Stephen Sondheim. I thought about doing that with Cinema Snack Bar. That was one of my choices. Because they say, when do we eat?
When do we eat?
When do we eat on there? So play a little of that. Look it up. It's called Live Alone and Like It by Stephen Sondheim. You might have to find it on Turner Classic Movies, TCM or something like that. Because it's not anywhere to be found.
Here it is. Let's see. Oh, here's a Mel Torme version. Here's the version from Dick Tracy. Hang on.
Hey, come here. Come here.
We can watch.
Hey,
we can listen to this scene.
You don't have to wear what Tess tells you to wear. Come here.
Where are you going? It's right after that. I watched this.
I ain't wearing no suit.
School.
You can't fool me. That means the orphanage. I wear no suit.
Y'all know that kid from Hook.
Clothes don't smell very good.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you don't want to wear a suit,
run
just
home,
go
Jack.
Back in there and say you don't want to wear
run,
a suit.
Jack.
Otherwise,
well, pick the suit,
pick the
you,
suit
like.
You like.
Oh, you like.
Yeah?
The young man will be out in a moment.
It is the Mel Torme version.
What do we eat?
Live alone and like it.
Okay.
The birds and the trees.
I learned something today. It's Mel Torme. Let me find the Mel Torme version so we can hear it.
Unless you want to hear it. Just keep it going from there.
I never
keep
knew
it going
that.
From there.
That sounds
Unless
better here. Let's see.
I don't know. You get to hear him say, when do we eat?
Wow. It's never going to get played on Spotify. Intro's way too long.
Live alone and like it, free as the birds in the trees. High above the briars, live alone and like it. I do whatever I please.
I love the feel
when
of this.
When my heart desires,
yeah.
Free to hang around or fly at any old time.
When do we eat?
Never knew.
When do we eat?
No equivocation. Most of all, no guarantee.
On my tombstone.
That's awesome. Beeb was also released his first album, Driven by Dreams, in 2000. He was in a popular group called Zoot, and now he lives here in Nashville. So
I love
Beeb.
Their suit riot.
Acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and vocals. Graham Gobble.
There you go, Graham. Yeah, Gobble.
That's
the two guys. I want Beeb Birtles and Graham Gobble.
Yeah, that's right. That's awesome. That's the old double letter back to back.
Yeah,
you gotta like that.
And just kind of unusual. Beeb
and Gobble. Yeah,
that sounds like that sounds like if they did a singer songwriter duo, just the two of them.
Beeb and Gobble.
The Beeb and Gobble. Yeah,
that's I'm in. He wrote my other favorite Little River Band song, used frequently in the other guys reminiscing. Play a little reminiscing.
Yeah.
Friday night, it was late. I was walking you home. We got down to the gate, and I was dreaming of the night.
That chord, baby, with the melody there.
Would it turn out right? Hurry, don't be late. I can hardly wait. I said to myself, when we're
gosh.
We'll go dancing in the dark, walking through the park and reminiscing.
Those, you owe yourself a good listen of those vocals.
Oh, yeah.
Good night.
He started as a drummer, as so many do, then moved to banjo. A huge fan of the Beatles, Hollies, and Bread. Yay.
Okay.
Anytime I can reference the band
Love
Bread.
Bread.
Yeah, that's our group. On drums and percussion, Derek Polici. His older brother, John, bought him a Trixon drum set. All kinds of drummers used Trixon back in the day. Keith Moon, Ringo, Buddy Rich. Played drums on John Farnham's Uncovered album. On that album, okay. Farnham covers the Beatles' Help on this project. It's so slow, and hate it so much. So play a little of You're the Voice.
Okay, right.
Y'all want to hear who John Farnham is.
And Farnham did some time in the Little River Band
Absolutely,
as well.
Which we're gonna talk, yeah, we're going to talk about that down here. We can talk about it now. Yeah, he multiple musicians throughout their tenure and multiple vocalists. One, there was a Farnham stint there.
Yeah.
On acoustic guitar and lead guitar, a guy named David Briggs wrote Lonesome Loser, another Little River Band hit. If you want to play a little of that while you're looking at it. And hey, he's the lead guitar player. So there's lots of guitars in Little River Band stuff. There's three guitar players, but he is the lead player. It's clear.
Have you heard about the lonesome loser? He's a loser, but he still keeps on trying.
That's enough of that.
That last vocal, that was me.
The
unsanctioned.
And as Rob mentioned, George Martin fifth Beatle produced this. That's awesome. So that's, and then Wayne, obviously on bass, vocals, lead vocals on Night Owl, and hang out for all things Wayne. So that's them on Time Exposure.
There you go.
Now, I'll tell you who is now, and I'll just bullet point quick them. Wayne on lead vocals and bass, Chris Marion on keyboard and vocals, Bruce Wallace on guitars and vocals, Ryan Ricks on drums, percussion and vocals, and Colin Winery on guitar and vocals. So it's them on something and vocals.
Right.
Like
yeah,
a key part of Little River Band is every instrumentalist has to be able to sing and carry a part.
Yes. And none of those guys now are Australian.
Oh, like, that's right.
Transitioned from a fully Australian band over time. It's like the thing about what's the thing about if you replace all the parts of a ship, is it still the same ship, right? If you replace all, right? So you can have that discussion about, like, are they still an Australian band?
And Wayne is not an original founding member.
Right.
He's just the most tenured.
He's the most tenured at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and he's been with them for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, but they had started, you know, in the early 70s. So, yeah, really interesting. They formed in 1975 in Melbourne, Australia. They've sold 30 million records worldwide, had 6 top 10 albums, 10 singles in the top 20 on Billboard. Reminiscing Alone has 5 million plus broadcast plays. I assume that's radio, television, yeah, you know, et cetera. Cool Change was honored as a top 30 Australian song of all time by the Australasian Performing Rights Association. That would be the APRA to me and you. I thought it was APRIA for some reason, but I guess not.
You didn't leave an international out of there.
Yeah. So I was wondering, I got curious about how many of the top 30 Australian songs of all time that we would know.
Yeah.
And it led me to go a step farther than that. And actually what I'm going to do on you now is I'm going to spring a Stump the Genius.
No. Here we go.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius.
I said your part.
Let's play Stump the Genius.
Oh, no.
Real or fake Australian act.
Okay. You're just going to throw out a name?
Yes. So
that's
funny. All right. So I'm doing my best Joey Abbott here. Okay.
So
you tell me which one of these two names
is
the real Australian act. Okay.
Okay.
I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
5 to give you. All right, so guess the Australian act, powder finger or flower toe?
Man, I'm going to go powder finger.
That is powder finger, correct. That they did the song called The Day You Come from 1998. It is one of the top 30 Australian songs of all time, powder finger. Number 2, blue candy or red gum?
Oh, man. Oh, goodness. Let's go blue candy.
That would be red gum.
Alternating. Okay.
I was only 19 from 1983. Okay. Number 3, Leonardo's Bride or Michelangelo's Fiance?
Oh, goodness, man. These are good. These are let's go with the bride. Leonardo's Bride.
Ding, ding, ding. Leonardo's Bride. All right. 1997's Even When I'm Sleeping. I hope somebody in Australia is finding this funny.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Number 4, Yothu Yindi or Wacho Womper? Who sang Treaty in 1991? Yothu Yindi or Wacho Womper?
I'm going to go Yothu Yindi.
You are correct. Yeah. That is Yothu Yindi.
Number 4. Stinking gum band got me. Red gum. All right. Last one.
All right. Yeah. Number 5, The Groggets or The Triffids? Open Road, 1986. The Groggets or The Triffids?
I'm going Triffids.
It's The Triffids.
Oh, yay!
Good job. Right. Good job. Okay. I do have a bonus. Okay. You can take this or leave it. This is all or nothing. You got to tell me now if you want in.
Okay.
Double or nothing. Okay.
I have to say yes or no.
Yeah.
Yes.
You want it now. Okay.
Let's roll
all right.
I'm taking my 80 to the bank. I won there, but I'll pretend like I'm double or nothing. Here
all right. Double or nothing. Was the 1987 hit To Her Door by Roger Lindsay and the Black Gals or Paul Kelly and the Colored Girls?
Oh, goodness. Oh, man. Goodness gracious. Neither one. Man.
Roger Lindsay and the Black Gals or Paul Kelly and the Colored Girls?
Roger Lindsay sounds like a real person, but I think I'm going, I don't want to say Colored Girls, but I'm going to go with the second one.
You're correct. It is Paul Kelly and the Colored Girls.
Goodness gracious. Wow.
Which I believe it comes as a reference to the Lou Reed song, Take a Walk on the Wild Side.
Okay, yeah, I know that song.
There's a reference in there to the Colored Girls, and okay. I think my understanding is that it became a joke or a repeated reference, and that's how that band name was named. So
great game.
Fully appropriate, but well done. What? You did really well.
I'm impressed. Okay.
If you double the 80%, you got 160% right.
Awesome. I Wilt Chamberlain did.
You did. You Wilt Chamberlain. Good job.
All right. Well, let's play the jingle again, and let's do my version of Stump the Genius. Here we go.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, so I was going to do Bodies of Water and kind of a tie. Okay. I was going to do like Nickel Creek, Frank Ocean. And so okay. I did like rhymes with. It was like Pickle Pink for Nickel Creek, Tank Lotion for Frank Ocean.
Tank Lotion.
Buddy Daughters for Muddy Waters.
Oh, God.
Prada Turf for Not a Surf. Peach Toys, Beach Boys, and Creep Do. What would this one be? Creep Stew Dumb Thing.
Creep Stew Dumb Thing, and it's a band, a water band. Creep Stew Dumb Thing. This is like that game. Is it Mad Gab?
Yeah.
Creep Stew Dumb Thing.
They had Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I was about to say, I was almost there. Deep Blue Something. That's something. Really
anyway,
funny.
But I could not find a way to get it. So so I could never phrase it right. So I just gave you what they were. All right. So I'm gonna do Famous Waynes. I feel like we might have done this before, but I don't know why. Have we done anything Wayne?
I don't know.
I couldn't think of anything we did. So let's just do it. Famous Waynes. Let's do 30 real seconds this time, or 35 maybe. I don't know. These are kind of tougher. 30 or 35. You make the call.
30. Let's make it 30. Let's I like it tough.
Okay. So this will have
you
Wayne.
You said these are harder?
I don't know.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see.
30. We'll see how we do.
30 seconds. By the way, my sound is going to be a Jawa from Star Wars. So when you hear, oh, TV, that's the little guy that they're selling at the beginning of the. Yeah, okay.
All right, so Famous Waynes.
All right, ready?
And be thinking, like, it doesn't... Well, you'll see where we go.
Okay.
Famous
all right,
Waynes.
Ready, go.
Actor, pilgrim, first name is the disciple Jesus loved.
John Wayne.
John
okay.
Wayne, yeah.
Oh,
he plays Newman in Seinfeld.
Wayne Knight.
Yeah, Wayne Knight. Hockey player, the great one.
Gretzky?
Yep. He's on Whose Line Is It Anyway? He now hosts,
Brady.
Yeah, Wayne Brady. Not Sir Isaac, Sweet Treat Like a Fig, Cam Newton.
Oh, Wayne Newton.
I said his last name.
Yeah, okay.
I was there. I was with you. You got all five of them.
Okay, yay.
I said the last name, but you got there. Thank you.
But just for fun, here's my alarm timer.
Oh, there it is, yeah.
All right.
Vegas singer, Donka Shane.
Donka Shane.
There it is. Yeah, Famous Waynes. You did good on that.
I think he was part of Powderfinger at one point.
Odds are good. Odds are good.
Watch a Whomper. Okay. I think that's all the info I got. If you got more, all right, we're going to go.
Let's go hang out with
now,
Wayne.
Now, hang out with Wayne Nelson, lead singer of the Little River Band. And I wish I had seen some of these other groups before and asked him if he knows these other Australian, you know what I mean? Because it's like been a weird transition.
Was he almost Wayne Nelson in the Colored Girls?
That's yes. Was he? Yes. Have you ever crossed paths with the Triffids
or Red Gum?
Or Red Gum? Yeah. All right. Let's go talk to Wayne Nelson, and we'll be back on the other side to tuck you in.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Hello, Wayne. Can you hear us?
I can. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for doing this. How are you? We were just on the phone with Donna. Thanks for.
No, that's Let me explain. 3 minutes before we're supposed to do this, I've got painters here in the house.
That's what she was saying. Yeah.
The mist set off all the smoke alarms. 8 smoke alarms going at once.
Oh my goodness.
Ran upstairs and they blew the master breaker upstairs for all the electricity too. So I had a chaos on my hands.
Oh my goodness. Are you okay now? Everything good?
Everything's good.
Man, that's awesome. Well, not awesome, but That's
quite a story.
That is quite a story. Yes.
It was a moment. Yeah, with 2 minutes to go before I joined in with you guys. So
all good.
All right, everything's calm now. But if you hear alarms go off, you know I'm back in the soup. So
you're good. Well, thanks for doing this. This is going to be fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Wayne Nelson of the Little River Band, legendary artist, legendary band, and it's such a pleasure to have you with us, Wayne, on the Great Song Podcast. Thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Yeah, legend in my own lunchtime. No, it's good to talk to you guys.
We just before we were supposed to hop on, you had a little adventure at home, and so we're glad that you made it. You had some painters set off some smoke alarms, and so you've fresh
every smoke alarm, 8 of them going out at once, with the alarm company calling and the electricity was blown. It was like it's just circus for a minute there.
So this is going to be a high energy interview. All that adrenaline is pumping, so we're good to go.
Woo-hoo! Right.
Yeah, well, we got I don't know where to start. We'll start with this one. So Night Owls, your introduction to the spotlight with Little River Band from Time Exposure. It's the first track on the album and the first single release from Time Exposure. Did you feel the pressure and weight of this? Were you like, let's just have some fun and see where it lands? Is that kind of where you were?
Well, at the time we were doing it, just a quick history, I didn't think they were going to call back. I was in an opening band for them in 1979. They were in between bass players. They were looking for somebody to sing and help the vocals. So they asked me to join, and we were going to make our own music, and I declined. And then the whole thing fell apart like they do, and 2 months later, and I called back to Australia. I never thought they would call back. They did. So in April of 80, here was the program. Come down and rehearse. If that goes well, we'll go on tour. If that goes well, we'll start rehearsing new material. If that goes well, we'll record. And if all that goes well, you'll become a band member. And so it wasn't an immediate thing of signing a piece of paper. It was, there was a long trial. What I didn't know at the time was that there were inner turmoils within the band that I was brought in potentially to be an alternative to the lead singer. Because there were, I don't like the way you did this. No, I don't like what you do here and blah, blah, blah. So one of those band things. But all that leads to going to Montserrat in 81 with George. I had been at rehearsal to, quote unquote, be a bookmark or a fill-in for Glenn to sing Night Owl so that we could work the song up. As it turns out, that was the plan that I didn't know about. But once we got to Montserrat and we're working with George Martin, everything was fun. It was just great. It was a great experience. We split up into day shift and night shift so that we could do a lot more work. And here comes Night Owls. The track is cut and here comes the opportunity to sing a lead vocal. So Graham says, come in and sing the lead vocal in the night shift. Okay. I still think I'm a placeholder for Glenn to do it later. And George wanted to hear him sing it. But again, the plan was always, it was in my key and so on and so forth. And George picked it. So the pressure of it was never an issue. Sure. It was the first time I ever sang lead in the studio. So it was new, but I had no visions of it becoming something that I was going to be the lead singer on this song. We knew it was a strong song. We knew it was a strong contender for a single. And I loved it. We had been doing it live. I was singing it. Glenn and I were actually splitting it. And so here comes the opportunity to sing it. And George heard it and he's just went hands down. This is a song that Wayne should be singing for the variety, for the record and the band. And Beeb had always been an extra lead singer as well. So it just made sense that now there were going to be three guys singing lead on Time Exposure. Then here comes Capitol Records to say first single. All that happened, in a succession that was kind of surreal. The pressure was to sing it live for the first time when it was a single. Sure. And it was charting.
Yeah.
That's when, okay, bring it, fella, you know, new guy. And there's where the that was the wheels hit the mud kind of thing. The tires hit the road. So get it right and do it. And as they say, the rest is history and behind us. But all that's a long answer to say.
No, it's great.
It was just fun. It was just fun to be in the studio with George and be cutting a new Little River Band album. I mean, it was like I say, it was surreal to be there.
So in that video, you are all up in the mic, closer than any human I think I've ever seen in the mic. You and that Shure SM58 are basically a couple. But no, have you always been an all up in the mic vocalist? Because is that your approach?
It's so hard to get some people. Like some people are like, would you please pull the mic in closer
to
yourself?
It's awesome because a lot of times we're talking to people that use mics and they're like, wait. Like, if you don't mind, just maybe lean in a little bit. So have you always been an all up in the mic guy?
Always. And the 58 was the perfect mic for it because, I'm in the weeds here, but the mouthpiece is actually still an inch away from the diaphragm of the mic. Yeah. It's sunk back an inch so that people could do exactly that. You can literally be on it, but you still got that little buffer between you and the diaphragm of the mic. So, the 58 has always been the mic of choice for that reason. And yeah, up until recently when we've moved away from Shure and moved to Bob Heil microphones where you can stay off of them a little bit. They're a little more sensitive, but at that point, yes, it was 58s all the time and swallow it. You know,
there's a reason they're a classic.
Let me throw one more other video question out. I just thought at you. I was going to talk to you about Take It Easy on Me with you on that. And you've got that silk vest unbuttoned and that brown hat looking like you should be in Newsies. Do you still have that brown hat?
I do, and I still got the vest. It doesn't fit anymore, but I still got it.
That's awesome.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so we've talked to a few acts from Australia, but none who I don't think we've talked to anybody who broke through in the States as early chronologically as Little River Band did. As far as breaking into American mainstream in particular, how difficult was it for the band in the mid to late 70s to break through to mainstream success in the States?
Well, I'll have to talk about it as a. I have knowledge about it, but I wasn't there at the time.
Right,
I
didn't at that point. But I'm sure you've heard some of the, and I didn't know how long it lasted. I'm interested in it being so far apart in the pre-internet age. You know, it is just as fascinating for me to find out how people handled that sort of thing. Even going with, being distributed by different companies on one side than the other, that sort of thing. So I'm just interested in any of that you have to talk about.
The situation at that time was successful Australian acts moved. They left Australia because every event, every tour, if you wanted to record somewhere else, everything to get to the world you're 8,000 miles away from the world. Yeah. So Bee Gees, Olivia, the Easy Beats, I think AC/DC predated LRB, but regardless, anybody from there that wanted to have the success, they all decided to move.
Wow.
And the thing that was unique about LRB was they said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to leave our home in order to have this success. We'll do what we do and we'll roll the dice, see what happens. The manager for Little River Band at the time was a man named Glenn Wheatley. It was his idea to assemble the singers and the writers to create Little River Band. There were three other successful acts that those people had been in. Glenn Wheatley brought them together. Number one, number two, when the music was, the first round of music was assembled, he stuck it in a briefcase and flew to LA and started knocking on doors and got turned down a lot until Capitol put them on a record label called Harvest, which was a sub label of the Capitol thing and said, let's give this a shot. And it caught on. And then another album later, Capitol condensed it, put it onto the Capitol label, and away we went with a 6-album deal because instantly, it was obvious that LRB was writing good songs and going to be a hit. The dilemma for being in Australia was that, every tour starts. When I came along, every tour was starting 40 to 50 grand in the hole.
Wow.
Even more, possibly. I don't know the numbers at that time because I wasn't privy to that kind of information. But we freighted all of the gear, all of the guys, families sometimes, and headed off to a European tour or a U.S. tour, and full crew, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, round trip international airfares. Again, every tour started with a whole lot of red ink.
So
I hope that answers your question about how difficult it was, because it was hard. And then you've got all these negotiations going on now with other labels in other countries, other releases, different artwork, et cetera, et cetera. All of the machinations of making albums at the time. All that stuff has to be handled, legal, artistic, et cetera, et cetera, and best handled in person. Because the other thing that was such a drag in the late 70s, early 80s, is that at every conversation, station had an echo through 8,000 miles of undersea phone cable.
Wow.
Cable. So you had to, so when you're done talking, you stop, and the person at the other end is still listening to 5 seconds of delay. Then they talk. It was an art form just to learn how to converse with people internationally at the time. So it was not like the internet. It wasn't like doing Zooms and whatever. Cell phones didn't exist.
Sure, yeah.
But just think about it. The technological challenges of doing that, you had to wait until the person was awake in Australia or America to even book. So you had to go there. You had to go and be in person. The accent was thick and hard to understand. It was a chore for me. It was an adventure for me to understand. Please repeat that again, because I don't know what you just said about my hair to come to Australia. But
yeah, you grew up in Chicago. It's a little different than Australia, right?
Way different. And but to face that challenge and to conquer it in 1975, had all of that extra junk in the way, besides the normal cutting deals and talking about deals and percentages and royalty flows and blah, 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 blah. Add on the fact that they were 8,000 to 9,000 miles away with a 5 to 10 second delay in the phone line, if you could keep the line open. So it had to be crazy. And I know the stories vicariously because I've been told about them and heard about them. But now in the end, the fact that they would not move ended up shooting them in the foot, because all the success was in Germany, Canada, and Europe.
Wow. Yeah.
It was not, they were known and they had a moment of success in Australia, but they weren't, the band was not nearly as popular or famous in Australia as it was as the band that left Australia to go and tour and then came back home. So it became a cross to bear in the end, but breaking it around the world in 75 was a real challenge to do it from Australia.
The talking about touring and stuff, one thing I gathered, do y'all still tour using a bus? Whereas like Ambrosia, Firefly, they still use airports. Are y'all still bus travelers for tour?
We're still on the bus, and everybody that we pull up, they go, "Are you still sleeping on a bus?" And I said, "Are you still sleeping in an airport?" Again, because of it being basically U.S. and Canada, we've worked out a way to take a bus and a trailer, pull our gear, show up with our equipment on stage and out front so that we know our cables work, our mic stands work. We're not at the mercy of somebody who did a Monday morning solder and have the cable break in the middle of the show.
Yeah, you're using your gear, your setup, you know everything.
Yep. And if something goes down, we know where it is and how to fix it, whatever. So yes, we're on a bus, 12 bunks. Sometimes we can leave from Nashville because the bus, the crew, everybody is here.
That's recent, right? Because weren't you in Arizona? I think one of the last interviews I saw was like 2021. You were in Arizona at the time.
Was. That's why I got painters in the house setting off the smoke alarm, because we just moved here a month ago. Moved back here.
Welcome back to Tennessee.
Well, thank you. And we're loving it. I got to tell you, it's very cool to be, if we got to go to an airport to go to the bus, I'm going with the guys. It's not like I'm a fly in, a walk on kind of a situation. We're doing it together, and it feels good to land that plane and then just come home and not have to fly four more hours to get to Arizona. Sure. Love Arizona, but it just wasn't a good work situation.
Do you add in, I guess you probably, when you're booking your stuff, you got to add in an extra date or an extra day of cushion since it's not airport, it's more bus. So I guess you plan, your tour people plan that in with some cushion based on bus versus airport.
We do that as a safety anyway. And the good thing is, if we're getting on the bus or if we're flying to the bus, we fly the night before, everybody gets a good sleep on the bus. A lot of bands that you're talking about, they fly in on the day of the show. Well, first of all, that dries your throat out. So vocal bands flying on the day of the show, there's a challenge there.
Wow.
But especially with, you know, the airlines and the weather and everything being so erratic, you really run the risk of not making the show. We've been pretty close with one or two people who had to fly in of, you know, they're renting a car and running to the show. That just doesn't make for a calm situation to get together and do a vocal check and a good sound check and be ready to put on a good show. So all in all, the least risk and the best health issue or the best health scenario is for us to get on the bus, have a sleep, wake up where we're going to play, do the gig, get back on the bus and go do it again. So that is tried and true. And I'll take a bus over a plane any day.
Well, we've got another question that's going to follow up on this, but we'll hit a couple others first. JP, what you got?
Okay. You've played with Jim Messina. You're on the Oasis album, which I listened through segments the other day just in preparation for it. New and Different Way, track one. It's an adventure and like funky moving bass, and there's a lot going on. It's like beach funk to me. And then track two is like, do you want to dance? You basically carry the majority of that song, especially on the verse. And it took me just two tracks to realize this is like completely different than Loggins and Messina stuff. And the biggest difference is the bass lines and like syncopative rhythms that carry it. Talk about that Oasis project with Jim.
He was, again, right place, right time. First of all, he auditioned 60 bass players.
Holy cow.
Smokes.
Goodness gracious.
60 players from Santa Barbara and LA mostly.
Wow.
And I have to tell you this story. You'll love it. When I went to LA in 78, another friend of mine from Chicago was a percussionist. He went as well. There was a card on the musicians union board. Jim Messina is looking for a percussionist and a bass player. Well, Jeff had done things by the board, by the book and joined the union. I went there, seat of my pants because of a friend and went with, word of mouth, try to get jobs. Jeff calls me. He says, Messina's looking for a bass player, a percussionist. Here's his number. So I called the number and he said, who is this? Where'd you get this number? Well, a friend of mine saw it at the Musicians Union. He said, bullshit, my name is not supposed to be at the Musicians Union. And he hung up. And I went, well, there goes, there went a good shot to play with some. I admired Loggins and Messina. Still do, love their music. 20 minutes later, he calls back and he said, I'm sorry, but that just made me furious. You called, you're here, you're looking for the gig. Let's talk. And then next day I met him and had the job that night.
That's so awesome. That's cool.
You talk about luck. I mean, that was just, there was no way he was going to call back and he did. So, so the band was assembled in Santa Barbara. I did a lot of commuting, but the drummer in the band was, Hispanic, and Jimmy was putting together this, what you heard, this intricate Tex-Mex pop blend. And I say this long before Miami Sound Machine became popular. I know they were playing the music, but Jimmy was on the front edge of that kind of a thing for California, Southern California musicians. It was a crazy challenge to learn how to play that music being written by Messina, but being interpreted by a Mexican drummer who I had never worked with in that genre before. So huge challenge, lots of fun, and then add ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da vocals and horns on top of that.
Yeah.
So that was the layers that were going on. There were all these intense rhythms between the horns, the vocals, and the rhythm section. And to put that down in the studio was an amazing process. It took us about 6 months to rehearse it and get it ready to go to the studio. Then we were called to open for Little River Band for 2 weeks. And they were looking at this thing going, well, Messina's a hero to us because of Poco, Buffalo Springfield, Loggins of Messina, et cetera. So they're watching every show for 2 weeks just to like soak up this thing that they had never, you know, experienced before. And at the crux of it was, they knew they were going to replace the bass player and they were looking for somebody that sang. So they went, if he can do that and pull that off live for 2 weeks in a row, well, he'll obviously be able to play, you know, our simplified, you know, pop music. There should be no problem there. So again, right place, right time. But working with Messina at rehearsal in the studio, in a nutshell, so we're doing all this complex music. And it's an assembled band that barely knew each other. We got to know each other quite well. But his thing was, we're going to rehearse this stuff until you can do it literally in your sleep. You can do it if you're sick. You can do it if you're tired. You can do it. We're going to have a baseline. Now, if we're having a crazy good night and there's other stuff flying around, that's all cool. But if we're having a night where you don't know which end is up, you have a baseline that you can go back down to. I don't mean baseline as a bass player, but you've got a foundation that you can just go back to autopilot and go all the way back to rehearsal and lock it down there. And then the show will be fine. There won't be any train wrecks because bands have train wrecks sometimes when you're playing that kind of stuff live. And, that was his mantra. That was his go-to philosophy. Lock it in at a basic level that you could do it every night that way and then have fun with it. And that's what we did.
Wow. How does that differ or is it the same compare and contrast as far as working with Little River Band stuff when you're working on, you know, you've got these crazy vocal things and, you know, these rich harmonies and textures and arrangements. Is it a similar process for Little River Band?
It is. And the truth of what I learned from Jimmy is that works for everybody. Mm. Other than the most, avant-garde, totally, spontaneous bands, like in the pop world, like Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Fish apparently never do a show the same, totally different philosophy. But like you say, when there's 4 and 5 part vocal harmonies and hits presented the way, if we went on stage and did the show like Weather Report or Fish, our audience would go, what the heck happened to them?
So there's
a responsibility and there's an ethic there that you got to present the song the way it got you to where you are.
Yeah.
Those people bought the record. They didn't come there to listen to you mess with it. They came there to hear you present it with energy. And so we do that. But the baseline is if we're having technical problems or if something's not working right or somebody's just having a bad night, vocally, playing wise, whatever, everybody just reverts back to that thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just good philosophy for any live band unless your Weather Report or Fish, or, you know, you're there to play outside the lines jazz all night.
Yeah. I know Rob touched on the like gang vocal approach that y'all have. I mean, the vocal production that y'all put together is fantastic. I can go way back even to the Playing to Win album in 85. You carry the lead and help co-write two of my favorite tunes on that project, Piece of the Dream and Count Me In. I love both of those, but with the punchy bass, and that's great. But y'all's gang vocals and choruses are so reminiscent of another Chicago band that I love. I'm a huge Styx fan. So you put that together based with that you had some time with some John Farnham and some Little River Band. And me and Rob are both John Farnham fans, but you're the voice. So all that, like, talk about the vocal preparation that goes into putting together either the tracks or live. You touched on a little bit, but, like, that's a big focus of the Little River Band project, is, or all their projects, is the vocal
arrangement.
Arrangements. Yeah, thanks, Rob, for helping me with that.
It is, and a lot of rehearsal goes into it, a lot of experimentation with putting the right person on the right note for their voice, because 9 out of 10 times you might have a blend where I was on the bottom, John was in the middle, and Graham was on top, or Glenn was on the bottom, I was in the middle, and Graham was on top. Graham was always up on top because of his amazing falsetto abilities. He's the Graham Nash of Little River Band. but back in those days, those arrangements and rehearsals weren't any different from what we do now. We look for parts that are right and put it together. The biggest difference of the band now to then is there are 5 people singing now, mm-hmm. instead of 3 or sometimes 4. So that 5th person, it's really got to blend well with everybody being in the right space. But in terms of live, as far as the studio is concerned, sometimes it comes automatic, and sometimes you got to experiment with that one. Just doesn't ring like the other ones do.
Right.
And, I've always had a way to explain it. There's when the harmonies are right and the voicings are right, it creates another note. It creates an overtone in the room. You can have 3 people singing, but you can hear 4 or 5 parts, 1 above and 1 below. And that is a scientific thing with waveforms and whatever.
That's awesome.
But to work it down to 1 word, I call it the ping. If you're singing and you hear this room singing with you and there's a ping to it that nobody's doing that note, you know you've got the right voicing.
I love that.
And that's good.
John brought a different force to the ping, but we worked around it and found out where I was singing bottom harmonies with John at the top of my range all night long. I was literally shouting in tune to keep up with Farnham, because Farnham would take his mic and he would put his mic. You talk about Mike working a mic. You watch John live. He's got the mic a foot away from his mic, from his mouth. Down here, holding on his chest. Well, we're not doing the visual, but whereas some of us have to put it right. He was just a phenomenal powerhouse. Glenn was a great singer. I'm not taking anything away from Glenn, but Glenn and John were completely different voices and strengths. So I sang above Glenn, but again, that ping in the room was where we knew that we had the right voicing, and that's I look for that. Now, the weirdest thing about the lineups is because people didn't like each other. There was a moment with Little River Band where we were singing all of our parts separately.
Oh, wow.
Because the people didn't want to be in the room with each other. Wow. So we were tracking things separately. When John came to the band, it came back to what Little River Band had started with, where everybody got along and everybody was singing in the room around a mic. We try to do that as much as possible when we record now.
Sure.
Given logistics, sometimes you got to sing a part and let people put a layer over it, because that's the way studios are now in home studios and whatever. But there was never a day better than when we all sang together and made that room ring. We do it live, and we do it with, you know, vocal warmups every night before we play, and it's just a magical night. And then you know immediately what you got and what you don't before you walk out there on stage.
That's good.
At my ripe old age. Yeah.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Wayne. We want to be respectful of your time. We know you've got 40 plus years in Little River Band, so we could talk to you for ages about
it. For 40 plus years.
For 40 plus years. We could chat, talk about songs.
I'm good,
sing
you guys.
Live.
If you got anything else you want to ask, just go for it.
There
I'm
one
good.
Question we ask everybody that we'll wrap up with. So you're on tour, either with Little River Band or you go out and do some solo stuff, whatever. You're on tour and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I would get a 3 Musketeers bar when I was growing up. My mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and it's the most ounces. So I get a 3 Musketeers bar. What does Wayne get in a gas station?
Cheetos and a Red Bull.
Boom. There we go. Spoken like a true bus expert.
That's right.
That's a lot of people are like, we're in planes. That's the right way to answer that. Cheetos and a Red Bull. Love it, Wayne.
So. Three food groups, cheese, rice, and sugar.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, I live in Hendersonville. You're now in Nashville, so we'll get together for some Cheetos and Red Bull sometime. We'll hang out. So.
Seriously, love it.
Thanks.
I'll meet you. You name the truck stop, and I'm there.
Hey, we're in. I love it. You've been a lot of fun, Wayne. Thank you so much for your time. Keep doing what you're doing. It matters.
Same to you guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll see you.
Thank you, man. Cheers.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Wayne Nelson of the legendary Little River Band. We've got to find out, if you're an Australian listener, and I know you're out there, please let us know, what do you guys say that is equivalent to the American Mount Rushmore?
Yep.
When you need to classify like the top three or four of something, what do you say? Or is it just like, they're in the top tier? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But we have this, it's very convenient piece of conversation for us to be like, who's on the Mount Rushmore all time of, you know, pitching, you know, in the National League or whatever.
And that's kind of a weird number, four, like the top four. You would never say, be like, what's the top four?
It's true. What comes out is like, oh, what's the top five? Right?
Yeah, top five, top ten. Top ten, something like that. You would never say top four, but Rushmore, saying Mount Rushmore.
You have to shave somebody out of that top
somebody
five.
Somebody doesn't make the cut.
It's a tough discussion.
Red Gum, sorry.
Yeah, Red Gum, you're out. All right. I think that's all we got this week for the
that's okay. That's go good.
Check out Little River Band's greatest hits. They have a treasure trove of vocal awesomeness, guitar awesomeness, great songs, great performances in there. And we kicked it off today with the Night Owls, but there's a whole, as we played you bits and pieces of other stuff. Go do some exploring with the Little River Band this week and go see them if they're at a festival or something, because they're still out there kicking it and crushing it and touring like mad. So they'll be coming soon to
And we'll hear in the interview how they tour, how they travel, which is not traditional.
That's right, yeah.
Or maybe it's really traditional. Not you'll like that part.
Not necessarily what you would expect for right now, yeah. All right, we'll be back next week with another great song. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.